Hey everybody, Alex Newman here. Welcome back to Conversations That Matter. This is the New American Magazine, and we have a very special guest for you today. Another doctor who's been on the front lines of this madness. He has treated over 1,500 COVID patients. He's now doing telemedicine using the FLCCC protocol. We've had Dr. Pierre Corey, Dr. Paul Merrick, and many others involved with this. And he saw a lot while he was working in hospitals from 2016 to 2021, especially from 2020 to 2021 involving COVID, that was really alarming to him and also to me just in our discussions. So Dr. Jason Lakatos, he's a board certified in internal medicine. He's also the CEO and owner of Blue Dream Music Group. He's got an incredible background. I looked at some of his old, medical school transcripts, always, top of the class. Everybody recognized just a top quality doctor here. He's got a pending lawsuit against Hospital Corporation of America, a very politically connected mega corporation that owns a bunch of hospitals. And he became very concerned about what was going on with the remdesivir that was giving to patients. They tried to block him from prescribing hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, instead trying to force him to use remdesivir. Doctor, thank you so much for coming on the program with us. And just tell us a little bit about what you saw in the hospital when it came to, because I mean, you volunteered right at the beginning to treat COVID patients. I mean, you were one of the first and you were incredibly successful. And then they came back and said, no, you can't keep doing that, you got to do something different. Tell us what you saw.
Exactly. Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Alex. I really appreciate the chance to, speak out about this and kind of get my story heard, because unfortunately it's been, shadow ban after shadow ban, sometimes full bans on the social media. And just for even, speaking out about, successfully treating patients with hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, and they just don't want that to be seen, basically. And this has been going on since basically March, April, 2020, the beginning of the pandemic. So, I say it's kind of the gift and the curse that I got, I say with the help of, God and stuff, figuring what worked for COVID basically in the beginning of the pandemic. And I had done my own research. There was a lot of things happened kind of the first week of March, first, second week of March. And I was, lucky enough that I had one of the first COVID patients in, in Florida, actually the first one of two in Tallahassee, actually. So, I had done some research. Basically, there was a, on hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine versus remdesivir. There was already some data out from China, basically, that had, shown effectiveness, especially at least in vitro, in the lab study showing that the chloroquine definitely outperformed the remdesivir head to head. So when I saw this, remdesivir wasn't even a thing, initially when it started, but, I basically started using the hydroxychloroquine on the first patient I had, and there was French doctors that had, I think they treated about 1,000 patients or so, and this was reported in the media initially. President Trump had talked about it. And once he started talking about it, it became, highly politicized, obviously. And that was...
What kind of results did you see, doctor, as you were treating your patients with hydroxychloroquine and zinc? Were they improving? Were they... I mean, cause from the media narrative, yeah, you think they all must have been dropping dead.
I'll say the pandemic, it started off pretty slow, actually. So it wasn't as crazy, as they made it out to be. But the very first patient I had... it was an astounding effect because she was very sick. She had oxygen saturations at around 88%, 89%.
Oh, wow.
Consistently for the first 3 days she was there. We did get the, it took 3 days or so to get the COVID test result back then. And so she tested positive. I had done the research and I was like, hey, let me try this hydroxy. It sounds like it's, it may work. And lo and behold, she got one dose at nighttime, one dose in the morning. And when I saw her the next morning, it was like instantly I noticed the clinical benefit was huge, because the morning before in the last couple of days, she was coughing constantly when I was talking to her. So she could barely talk because she's coughing so much. So right there clinically, I saw she wasn't coughing at all the next morning after one dose of the HCQ, the hydroxychloroquine. And, I was like, wow, I almost didn't believe it, how effective, how quick it worked. And lo and behold, we rechecked, her oxygen levels went up from 88% to about 97% overnight. And I was like, no, this, you know, this can't be. I mean, I was a little bit surprised that her levels were that low to begin with, because she didn't even really, she had a tiny speck of pneumonia on the CAT scan. So I did a full CAT scan on her lungs to see, you know, how bad her lungs were. And I'm like, oh, they look kind of almost perfect, you know, just about. So I'm like, where's this 88%, you know, coming from? And, you know, lo and behold, COVID, something that's been neglected, COVID can get in your red blood cells. It gets in your blood vessels and the lining of the blood vessel wall too, which can cause these chronic long-term effects with it. But it's kind of still being, you know, looked into, I think, scientifically, you know, studies as far as what it does in the red blood cells. But
Jason, was this experience that you had with this patient, was that typical of what you saw throughout the early phases of the pandemic?
Yeah,
you treat them with hydroxychloroquine and they'd improve quickly?
I got the instant response with the patient the next morning. She's like, I'm ready to go home. So that was like, wow, all right. Okay, and I tried to keep her. She's like, I'm ready to go home. I followed up with her at home. She did great. She was better in a few more days. It became the protocol for HCA at that time after about, you know, maybe 2 weeks later or so, 2-3 weeks later. And it was a protocol to use, you know, potentially they recommended using hydroxychloroquine. And then along with zinc and azithromycin, you know, based on the French doctors talking about it, there was some other, you know, different doctors, Dr. Zelenko, outpatient protocol, and had success using that protocol. And it was used in the hospital by pretty much all the doctors there. And this was at Capital Regional in Tallahassee. So we were all using it. We had great success with it. And we were noticing clinical improvement and patients were going home. It seemed very simple to treat at the time. And then come about May is when things kind of turned, you know, went the other direction as far as Dr. Fauci started talking about you know, saying hydroxy, well, it's anecdotal evidence, we need a big trial, etc. So, you know, they went out and paid for the money to do to study remdesivir, Gilead's drug. The NIH paid for that. And I looked at the study. It took a while to even, you know, really get into the study, to find the study online anywhere, but they got emergency use authorization for the remdesivir. I believe it was towards the end of May, somewhere around there, beginning of June. So at that point, they also said in the emergency use authorization or with the study, they said, don't give hydroxychloroquine with remdesivir. It'll make it less effective. And then there was also, there's a couple studies that came out that were retracted within a day on in the Lancet and New England Journal of Medicine, saying that hydroxychloroquine actually increases the mortality rate. You know, obviously a bad thing, more people dying. So that became kind of the, you know, what the administration, the pharmacist would tell you when you would try to order it as of June 2020. They say, hey, the study just came out and said it's dangerous to use. It prolongs QT, which is repolarization in the heart. And there's a lot of drugs that can do that, you know, nausea meds, Zofran. There's a lot of things. It doesn't really, in the whole year and a half that I was treating people with it, you know, when I could anyway, I never got one call from a pharmacist saying, oh, their QT is prolonged, but that can potentially lead to an arrhythmia. That was kind of the concern. It never, you know, it was exaggerated by the studies. The studies were retracted within a day because the data, they wouldn't show where they got the data from. It was pretty obviously very likely falsified data, a lot of it. And from that point on, it became part of the protocol change to use remdesivir. It wasn't FDA approved at this time. It was
so phony data to demonize hydroxychloroquine. And then they started saying use remdesivir instead. Yeah. Huh?
And then what happened? Well, it's part of the guidelines. So they said, you got to consult the infectious disease doctor. They're in this special government program. You get this amazing, you know, new medication for COVID, remdesivir. And I looked it up and I said, hey, this is, you know, it's a failed Ebola drug, you know, where'd they come up with this? And, you know, it inhibits other viruses, et cetera. But I'm like, that's kind of weird that, you know, we have something that's working great. And, you know, I don't know the exact, you know, at the time, it seemed like all the patients were surviving, you know, pretty much, you know, unless the patient didn't want treatment or maybe they had it for 3 weeks when they came in or something, you know. But early treatment was definitely working great. And then we went to the remdesivir and I was like, let's see how this looks. So I was covering in a, let's see how this actually does. And I took kind of a sample of, you know, basically I found, this is one of the other hospitals I was in covering nights. And I basically took about, I located the patients on our list that had COVID, ICU, non-ICU. I wrote down their names. I followed them throughout the week I was on. You know, I was, obviously I'd be managing them overnight. You know, a lot of them were doing pretty poorly. And that's why I was like, what's going on? You know, I'm like, this is crazy. I'm like, I haven't seen patients do this poorly on our protocol before, you know, so what's going on with the remdesivir? Is this doing anything? Is it helping or not? And so I studied the patients. It was about 20 patients. I looked at the chest x-rays. I'd see their chest x-rays were clear when they came in. Within 2-3 days, they have bilateral pneumonia. And I'm like, okay, is that just a progression of COVID or is this remdesivir doing it? What's going on? Like a pulmonary edema, fluid in the lungs type pattern. So that was kind of worrisome. And these patients had very low oxygen saturation, some of them even on the ventilator with 78%, 80% oxygen saturations. And you couldn't really get them up. I mean, I could give them a diuretic, a Lasix, something like that would get some of the fluid off their lungs. And that would help more than remdesivir did. But at that point, I kind of compiled a little bit of the data. I mean, it was a small sampling. I was very concerned with what I was seeing that, hey, these patients are, their chest x-rays are getting worse. Clinically, they're getting worse. Fevers are still elevated. Their white blood counts are elevated. Their CRP, C-reactive protein is elevated. Their SED rate, these inflammatory markers are all elevated. So I'm like, what's going on? This is not improving them at all. And in the 1 week I was on, the 7 days, 15 out of these 20 patients all died.
Oh my goodness.
Not necessarily, you know, on my watch or something, but in the daytime, I'd look them up. I'm like, oh, they died, you know, in the daytime today.
And so do you think, Jason, that the remdesivir played a role in those deaths?
You know, I was getting a lot of calls overnight with the adverse effects. So I would get calls about patients having seizures, some intractable vomiting, where they would then, especially if they're on the ventilator, then they would aspirate. Now they got an aspiration pneumonia. So that was a big concern. There's a lot of different things. Some patients just flat out said, they had side effects. They had headaches. You know, they had abdominal pain, different things that they would mention, some of these patients. But I was just very concerned the fact that 75% of these patients had died getting the remdesivir at all. And I went from, you know, it kind of shows you how slow the pandemic really took off. It was really, you know, it did seem more like, you know, it was highly politicized and it's kind of like you're waiting for these patients to come in. I only treated about 60 patients total in the 3 months at the other hospital. That's how slow it was. And that was volunteering to take as many COVID patients as I could. But as far as I knew, I could say all my patients survived. So for me to say pretty much all of my patients, except for one that didn't want any treatment, that got hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin, and zinc, are all surviving, you know, and I'd follow these patients even after I was off work. I'd follow them to see if they went home. And, you know, so as far as I could tell, they're all surviving. So to me, this was a shock. I said, hey, this new fancy drug that's also costing, from what I heard, $3,500 for a 5-day course. And I'm like, this is the first time the hospitals want you to use something that expensive. Normally, if it's
the government's paying for it, right? And they get a bonus for putting people on it.
So it's like, you know, normally if this was another antibiotic, if it was that expensive, they'd be like, you'd have to get an infectious disease consult even to order it, because they'd say, that's an expensive drug. Do you really need that? Can you use something less expensive type of thing? So this was like a first time I'd seen the hospital, you know, and basically.
Where were these orders coming from, Jason? 7 years of,
you know, working in the hospitals from residency.
And so. Jason, so I guess the hospital was telling you to do this and they were listening to the federal government. I mean, how was the chain of command with these orders to give the remdesivir?
So I'll say the HCA, they basically had guidelines in place. Initially, they did have recommended hydroxychloroquine. As of June, they updated the guidelines, said, don't use it anymore. It's potentially harmful. Use remdesivir. So they would basically say, hey, our HCA guidelines say you have to use remdesivir. This is a corporate guideline from Ohio. Corporate pharmacists is what I was told. You have to follow the HCA guidelines if you want to continue working in this hospital. Otherwise, you're fired, go home. You can do it on your own time type of thing. This was from June 2020. And they said, well, there's no data. The data shows it doesn't work, et cetera. I try to, you know, have a rebuttal and I'd say, hey, those studies were retracted. Here's some studies showing it works. I'm like, you can look up all my patients at the other hospital. You know, all these patients are surviving. It's working well. Clinically, the patients are doing better. I had a patient who was ready to go home that someone else consulted the infectious disease doctor, basically at night, or, you know, they showed up, basically saw the patient and told the patient, if you don't stay and get remdesivir, you might die if you go home. And the patient's like, holy crap. I thought I was doing good. I was ready to go home. I said, you are. I'm like, don't you think you're doing good? You feel better, don't you? Your oxygen levels are good. You're not coughing. You don't have a fever. And he said, absolutely. I feel great. And he's like, why did they tell me that, that I'm going to die if I don't get it? I'm like, honestly, I have no idea. I'm like, and I argued with the chief medical officer in the hospital about that, because he was telling me you have to consult the infectious disease doctor for every possible COVID patient, even before the test comes back. And I said, that's a waste of money. That's fraudulent. Billing the patient for something, a service they don't need from another doctor. It's going to prolong their hospital stay, increase costs, et cetera. My patient was ready to go home. My patient's now scared they're going to die because of the same infectious disease doctor. They're doing great clinically. They're ready to go home. Why am I delaying a discharge because they need remdesivir now? And so that was ridiculous. That was the first time, ever where there's a protocol in place where they say you have to follow our guidelines. You know, normally there's certain things, aspirin, for heart attacks, certain national, standards that we follow. And that's pretty normal, certain things that have been around a real long time. But for remdesivir, this is an experimental drug, a failed drug with Ebola. They had one, there's a Chinese study done in February. There was a, the in vitro study showed it may have some effect. They did a study on patients that, it showed it didn't work.
I looked at the WHO NIH meta-analysis, and it showed a 20-fold increase in renal failure and organ failure over other antivirals.
I would see people going to renal failure, increased liver enzymes. Those are two criteria.
We've only got a few minutes left. I want to ask you, and I know this is a little bit outside of the field of medicine, but I mean, do you think there's an agenda here, and can you speak to what it might be? Because I think a lot of folks are wondering, why would they do that? What's wrong here? What do you think the agenda is?
Well, I'll say one thing they just authorized remdesivir for use in under 12 years old patients now in the hospital, which is insane to me because these patients normally get through the virus in a couple of days. They got such good T cell immunity that they get right through it without. You very rarely need to even go to the hospital. So, that's crazy to me that they're using this experimental drug on even younger kids now, when it clearly, most doctors will tell you they don't see much benefit at all from it, but they're like, well, there's nothing else as far as they're told, But I think a lot of it's a big profit motive. Part of it for them to push to get the vaccines, actually get the emergency use authorization to pay for it with tax. Taxpayer money for the vaccines, they had to say there's no effective treatments whatsoever for the virus. So for them to say acknowledge hydroxychloroquine may work would basically not allow them to make the vaccines at all and get all that taxpayer money, which I did report this to the FDA. I did when the FDA didn't really give me much of anything except, report it to Gilead, the side effects.
The FDA told you to report it to Gilead?
So they have a, it's like the VAERS database for vaccine side effects. So there's a database for medication side effects and stuff. But they basically didn't give me, I'm like, hey, I'm very concerned. 75% of these patients, I frankly told the FDA, I said, this is fraudulent. You're wasting our taxpayer money on these, on vaccines and remdesivir, basically, when we have an effective treatment that works. So that was my big thing. I'm like, all these patients are surviving. You want me to use something where 75% of the patients are dying or going to kidney failure, liver failure, and it's not working for COVID anyway. So, I think it's a lot of politics there. It's a lot of politics, a lot of money. And it seems to be, on a world stage too. You go to other countries, I was in Spain, they have no idea what hydroxychloroquine is or ivermectin. Most people there, they're like, what? There's a treatment for COVID? I thought there was just a vaccine. So it's like, there's a lot of people, it's kind of a, I won't get into who's running, who I think's doing what, or, who's controlling this whole thing. But, it seems to be a big, people in power globally that are kind of dictating all these rules, all these mandates, that you need to wear a mask. And I'm like, hey, from my opinion, I wanted to get it so I could get through it. And I got effective treatment. Guess what? I have immunity to it now. I've been exposed. I've had so many people I've been around where they practically quarantined in my house. And I treated them, my friends. I haven't had one touch of symptoms since I've actually had the real COVID. And I did get one of the Moderna vaccines, which I had bad side effects. I had felt like I had pancreatitis, felt like I had an autoimmune reaction, which makes sense. I didn't get the second one, but I still got COVID 6 months later while I was in the hospital working. And I got through it with hydroxychloroquine ivermectin. Within one night of taking hydroxy, my 103 degree fevers were completely gone. 5-6 days of fevers gone, never came back. Didn't have to take ibuprofen, Tylenol, nothing. I took 2 days of ivermectin along with hydroxychloroquine. I did 5 days hydroxychloroquine. I took zinc, vitamin C. I almost felt like I didn't even need the ivermectin. Hydroxy worked so good on me. It was instant, like, hey, I'm gonna be perfectly fine. You know, and I was a little scared because it's, you know, it's one thing treating people. When you actually get it, you're like, all right, well, let's hope this stuff actually, it really works again. You know, like, you hear all the patients raving and you see them surviving and it's like, all right, then you're doing it yourself. Like, all right, now it really, really works. Now I'm really convinced. Now, you know, if you go back to the hospital and the doctor's like, how do you get back so quick? You had COVID, you're back, 6 days later or something. I'm like, yeah, I treated myself the same stuff I'm using in the hospital, hydroxychloroquine, zinc. I had, you know, taken azithromycin the 5 days. It didn't really do much for me, hence why I have my own protocol on my website, drjsun.com, drjsun.com. But I have a couple protocols. I call it the Blazing Sevens protocol. I went to basically around Henderson, right next to Vegas for medical school. So kind of where I came up with that name. I have the Shiba's protocol, which is a Shiba cryptocurrency. I'm kind of big into cryptocurrency, so I kind of made something catchy and maybe that would catch on. But I use my protocol now. Generally, I use doxycycline, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin. Those are the big three that I would prescribe.
And tell us one more time, Jason, before we let you go, where people can find that, your website one more time.
So Dr. Jason, drjsun.com. And I do telemedicine out there. I'm also through America's Frontline Doctors. I see patients through there. I see patients on my website through the FLCCC Alliance there, and awesome. I'm part of their group. So,
well, Dr. Lakaitis, thank you so much for your courage and speaking out. Thank you for joining us today. We'd love to get you back very soon to talk more on this incredibly important subject. Well,
thank you so
thanks again, and we really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Alex.
All right, folks. That was Dr. Jason Lakaitis down in Florida on the front lines of treating COVID from the start. Go check out his website, drjsun.com, for his protocols. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Alex Newman, your host here on Conversations That Matter for the New American Magazine. Go to thenewamerican.com. Share out all this information, folks. You're not going to find it anywhere else. Until next time, God bless you all.